As soon as anyone mentions the words B2B, you get an image in your head of two drones messaging each other, and there's no human face on it at all. But I think the easy thing to forget is that it's still people that you're talking to at the end of the day. I think it's all the same techniques you'd apply to any kind of marketing. I think you can still apply to B2B. Is it interesting, first of all, whatever content you're putting out? And then if that's on Twitter and you have a business on Twitter, you know, someone still made a conscious decision to load up, and they might be looking through their newsfeed, for example. You've still got them in the same scenario you would as a B2C company.
Hello, and welcome to Character Count by @TwitterBusiness. I'm your host, @JoeWadlington. We show you the creative ways that brands and businesses and people use Twitter to connect and engage with the audiences that matter most to them. And today, I am full of croissants, and we are in the middle of London and ready to record with @TideBusiness. No, not the laundry detergent company. Tide Business is a UK-based fintech company that focuses on supporting small and medium-sized businesses.
Hi guys, I'm Phil McElhenney. I'm the paid social manager at Tide Business.
We're going to talk about the qualities of B2B Twitter, fintech Twitter, ways to support small and medium businesses, and how to promote your mobile app. Later on in the show, we're going to hear from Monique Aristi, the head of university and diversity recruiting at Twitter. After that, I'm going to ask you, yes, you, loyal listener, for your hot takes on this episode's special topic. That is all later, but right now, we are going to hear from Phil McElhenney. So Tide Business is a fintech company, and that's such a buzzword at the moment. Could you explain to me more what fintech means right now?
So I think fintech centers around the idea of disruption, essentially. So it's
another buzzword.
Exactly. I'm full of them at the moment. But it's disrupting the traditional way that things have been done within finance. I think that everyone knows the major banks and how things work, but fintech companies are essentially out there and saying, why are we doing it this way? There's a better way we can do it. Here's the better way of doing it. And it's all through technology. And I think it's about finding the niche that you want to change. We're not actually a bank. We call ourselves a platform rather than that. So we think we give a platform for small businesses to go out and doing what they're actually good at, rather than spending time just on their finances and their banking.
And when you say that we help them save time, what are some ways in which Tide Business helps them save time?
So if you're a small business, you've probably got some kind of accounting software that you use. You might have something that you upload receipts into, for example. So rather than having all these different programs, you can do it all in one app with us. It's really quick to do and really simple to set up. You can open an account with us in just a matter of minutes as well. If you take a selfie and you have some photo ID, that's all you need to open an account. Whereas if you wanted to go to an actual, you know, a larger bank, you'd have to go into branch a couple of times. It might take 6 weeks to do. Whereas, as I said, with us, it would take 10 minutes and you've got a UK account number and sort code then and there.
So what are some qualities of the financial tech space on Twitter?
It's confidence in your product and what you're doing. I think it's also a challenging mentality, challenging the status quo and the way things are done. And I think it's a kind of almost a playfulness in terms of giving a face to what you do. I think like B2B, sometimes the word fintech can cause people to nod off slightly, but
yeah.
I think there's a kind of almost playfulness to it. And I think that there's a lot of new brands out there at the same time that are all trying to find their voice. Mm. And it's kind of making yourself stand out amongst that.
And you feel that the ones that are willing to be more playful are being able to get above the noise.
Exactly. I think that we're in a generation now where a lot of people, most people use social media and most people are looking for something a bit more real from a brand, essentially, that human side to it. And they almost expect that, I think, nowadays. So I think that being in fintech, you're naturally going to have a fairly young audience potentially. So it's kind of keeping that in mind and making sure that you're sticking to the principles that they'd expect from you.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds that other than playfulness, also being confident about what you're saying and leaning into that idea that people are excited about disruption and probably some type of irreverence and boldness as well.
Exactly that. So I think people are looking for a new way to do things often. So it's showing what you're doing, why you're doing it, and being confident in the reasons for that.
What are some qualities of small and medium-sized business owners? That makes them sound like the owners are small and medium size, which I'm sure many of them are.
Yeah.
Business owners come in all shapes and sizes. What are some qualities of entrepreneurs of small and medium-sized businesses that you think lead them to need something like this?
So I think a big thing is innovation. So I think if you've taken the decision to start your own business, you're already standing out from the crowd anyway. You're taking a bit of a risk, and you're moving away from probably the easy option. But I think if you're an innovator like that, you're looking at something that's different to your usual banking provider. And I think we're exactly that, or we aim to be. We're the kind of modern version of banking, essentially. And if you're someone that's willing to take, willing to try and innovate and to change for the better, then I think we're the perfect place to come to for that.
What else does Tide do?
So I'd say there's a few things you need when you're starting a business. You need an idea of what you're going to do. I think also that you need several sort of support networks in place as well. You need to know, how is the business going to run from a day to day? How are the accounts going to work? And I think that Tide can support you in that through taking you on the journey from when you start the business, you open an account, you get a lot of tips from us. We don't just leave customers kind of high and dry, and that kind of feeds, I guess, a bit more into our marketing plan as well, is that?
Yeah, I was noticing something on Tide Business that is very modern and that we're seeing again and again, which with modern marketing, you're giving them as much as possible for free.
Exactly.
Right? All of the support, all of the articles, the web pages, the techniques, and these things that don't have to do necessarily specifically with your product, mm-hmm. but just more holistically about being a small business.
We like to think of ourselves as a champion of small businesses. So our big aim for us is to give not only our customers, but if people want to come to us just for advice and resources anyway, we put out a lot of tips about all things that small business owners might want to know. So whether that's, how do I market my business on a very low budget? Mm-hmm. How do I acquire new customers? How do I run my business's accounts? How do I hire my first employee? We put all of these things out to kind of help people. We know how difficult it is to start a business. We've been there. A lot of people in our company ourselves have started their own business. So we know the kind of struggles, and we kind of hope to address those.
Right. Like, the more niche you can get, which is something Twitter is so good at, is finding that little niche of the world that you fit in, that you can be a big fish in your small Twitter pond, is a really powerful way to think about it. And is it interesting to your specific audience is a very helpful caveat.
Exactly that. I think with working in any kind of role where you're putting out a message to an audience about your company, before that message goes out, you have to just think of what am I trying to say with this message, and what are the people I'm trying to reach interested in hearing about? Just because you might be putting something out, in our case, about small business accounts, doesn't necessarily mean that everyone's going to be interested in it. But there is the audience that we want to reach are going to be interested in it. And I think that's always the thing you've got to bear in mind, is who the audience is and what they want to hear.
So if a community manager just started at a B2B company, what are the tips you would give them for beginning that job?
So I think there's three key things you need to look at, really. The first one is being data-driven. The second one is evaluating your previous activity. And the third one is setting out a clear plan of exactly what you want to achieve by being on Twitter.
I would love to talk more about how a B2B company can find their voice, because I think finding your voice on Twitter as a brand is one of the biggest and most important early struggles. And I think especially when you're a business that is talking to other businesses, it's simply not as innate to find a compelling voice. It doesn't just come out of there. You have to really make it.
People buy from people. And I think that can be applied essentially to a lot of B2B marketing. Even if you're not working in a directly sales-facing kind of business, like we're not a sales business. I think it's humanizing and personalizing the voice that you put out.
If you're a B2B business, you're looking at that tweet field and it looks like an empty, desert, hopeless rectangle, and you're thinking, I'm only talking to businesses and I need to fill this with a compelling voice. So that can be really important work, to figure out what your company sounds like. And it can be much more difficult if you know you're only talking to other companies. So tell me more about how you think a business develops their voice.
So I'll take it from a personal experience with that, with Tide. We have three values that we stick to in everything we do across the whole company. And the first one of those is being data-driven. The second one is being member first. And the third one is being one team. Hashtag one team, if we're on Twitter. And we apply that to all of our communications as well. So if we're on Twitter, we have a lot of our members on there. So we always aim to be member first. If we're putting anything out about the employees at our company, we're showing that we're one team. So I think when you're staring at that big empty 280 character space on Twitter, you need to think of what the values of your company are. Who are you as a company? And try and put out anything, any material that's related to one of those.
That's a really incredible tip. And we use it all the time. So at Twitter with our brand, the current three things that we focus on are human, bold, and electric. And so I use those again and again when I'm looking at Twitter marketing copy and when I'm editing other colleagues as well. And sometimes people, especially if they've been at Twitter a really long time, they'll look at a piece of creative and say, oh, it's not Twittery enough. Which I hold is the least helpful piece of feedback that there. I've been at Twitter for 4.5 years. So when someone says that to me, I totally understand what they mean and I can put it on track. But if someone is newer, they're less used to the brand, that doesn't make any sense. And I realize what they mean is human, bold, and electric. So whenever we look at a piece of marketing and it just doesn't feel quite right, then we'll use those three terms as pressure tests. And we'll say, oh, could this be more electric? Could it be more of the time, of the moment, plugged in, connected to a really specific event that's going on? Could it be more human? You know, could it have a voice that sounds like a person talking to another person? And having those three pillars is so helpful when you're crafting your marketing. So I love what you're saying about when a business, when a B2B business is thinking about their own voice, just think about what your company values are, or if your marketing team doesn't have three totems, three talismans, three like guiding principles to really come up with them, talk to your CMO, develop those. And then with each piece of content, you can think about how does this fit into our broader thing, or use them as ways to guide you back to something that sounds appropriate for your company.
The voice doesn't happen overnight, but I think it develops over time. But if you're always sticking to those principles that you've got at the heart of the business, then that voice will always be consistent. That messaging will always be how you want it to be, and you'll develop a voice from that if you're always sticking to your core principles.
And so when you're curating different topics for that, are you thinking not about like what Tide Business needs to put on their website for that day, but you're thinking, okay, member first. If I'm a member of Tide Business, what do I need to hear right now? Is it about it being the new year and new year marketing plans? Is it about going into Q2? That's kind of the meetings, how they go?
Exactly that. So we'll have a kind of content strategy laid out for the upcoming months, and it will be looking at what a business is thinking about at this time of the year. So for example, in January and in the new year, a lot of people start a business at that time. So prior to that, we might be putting content out about how do I start a business? How do I come up with a business idea? How do I stand out from the crowd? So I think it's thinking about those kind of seasonality points, thinking about what people are going to be looking for at that time and trying to kind of fill that need for them.
While talking to Phil about the things that small and medium-sized businesses struggle with, I couldn't help but think about recruiting. Small businesses need incredible teams, which made me want to talk about Twitter's expert recruiter, Monique Aristi, the head of university and diversity recruiting at Twitter. Here's Monique. First ways that a business can make diverse talent and new talent comfortable at their company.
If your company, if your organization, if your people aren't authentic in how they feel about diversity, the minute you bring students in, they're going to see through all of it, right? They're going to see through the falsehoods of what you're trying to promote because it won't be embedded in how your managers act towards your students. It won't be embedded in the content that you present. It won't be embedded literally in the walls of what you see. And that's what I appreciate about Twitter. When you come to a Twitter space, when you go through a tour, for example, there's just, depending on what floor you're on, you have the Love is Love wall, you have Black Lives Matter on certain walls, you have different installations. Just physically, when you look at the space, before you even talk to the people, when you look at the space, you naturally feel the inclusion. You naturally feel like this is real. They didn't just throw this up here because I'm here today. And then on that extra layer, when you're going through different handles, when you're going through just actually talking to people, looking at the videos and how diversified they are with regard to not just ethnic diversity, gender diversity, sexual orientation, there are all so many types of ways that we look at diversity. And just being able to see that and see yourself in that is huge. People want to feel like I can see myself. But we had such an overwhelming amount of students who literally would come up end the day after programming and just go, well, I'm not really sure why I was selected. I don't get how I got here, or I'm not sure why you all selected me.
And when, you know, there's a pool of 80,000 applications and they're not feeling a sense of pride or accomplishment at being at the top of that pile.
And at some point there is that, right? Uh-huh. But more so what they communicate and what they're expressing or what they're feeling is bewilderment. And so we had to sort of flip that on its head, right? And we completely 360'd it and started to tell them specifically, like, but you belong here. You have a perspective. We want you here. We want you in tech. We want we primarily want you at Twitter, but we definitely want you in tech. And here's why. And we spend, be it the 5 days for certain camps or 2 days for others, we spend majority of that time reinforcing that message for them, reinforcing that need for them to feel, stop worrying about why you got here, because you are here and you're smart. Now let's focus on what will keep you here or in tech in general.
I love that, because I remember a few years ago watching someone speak on diversity, inclusion, diversity and inclusion. And they said, diversity is inviting someone to the party. Inclusion is asking them to dance. Mm-hmm. And years ago, and I still think of that change where you really need to, you can't just bring the people there and do the recruiting and wave the flag and bring them in and then say, all right, you're here, you made it. And then not incorporate, and then not ask them to dance and bring them to the party that they're uncomfortable at.
Very much so.
What's the number one mistake that you see businesses doing when structuring an internship?
So I think when companies don't think about the duality of what an internship should encompass, be it both the work and letting them feel like a real, true employee, and also letting them feel like a person, right? And just saying, like, we're having ice cream, right? Yeah. Or we're going to lunch, or, hey, we're going to go to the museum of whatever. There are things that exist outside of work, and we want them to experience that. In most companies, if you want to have a successful internship that outlasts just the intern you have right then and there, you'll build parts of that into your internship.
At Twitter, we have mentors, and that is separate from the intern's manager. Yes. And what I love about that structure is all of the lifestyle, these business things that they just don't know because they've been a student their entire lives. They've never worked at a company before. Mm-hmm. That you don't want to go to a manager with. You have a question about what is the calendar invite? How do I work Dropbox? What time do people show up? Can I wear a tank top? Is this crop top too cropped? And you don't want to ask that from the person you're trying to impress, the manager who may decide if you get a job, instead of this extra person that is the mentor, that is your guide for those kind of soft skills that are just as important, I think is very smart.
Yeah. And honestly, you should develop a strong brand and relationship with your manager. Because they will be beneficial to your own career, right? They are deciding whether or not you get a job. But the more that you trust your manager, and again, this is something that every company should instill in their interns when they first get there, the more that you build that relationship and trust you and your manager, the better your overall experience will be, because they'll know where you're trying to grow, what you're trying to do. But understandably, you don't want to go to them with the silly questions. You don't want to go to them with the questions that kind of make it seem that you may not be ready for the opportunity. So having a very good and steady relationship with your manager is just as important as the mentor, but you can leverage and lean into the mentor to kind of help you with those silly things a bit more than you need to on your manager side. Like, there's so many different variations of what can success or leadership look like. So we try our best to get them as much exposure to that within their own offices globally as well as we can during their internship time.
Thank you so much, Monique. Clearly, you need to get back to applications, and we are going to get back to the interview with Phil. So how does AtTide Business use Twitter ads?
So being an app, a lot of our campaigns have an app install objective, which means that there's a lot of A/B testing around different optimization methods, different bidding methods, and different ways of acquiring those customers. So there's very much a split between our organic and our paid strategy on Twitter, and the paid strategy, which is what I look after, very much focuses on bringing new people into the business. So it's quite often for people, it'll be the first time they've been in any kind of contact with the brand potentially. So it's making sure that not only the brand messaging is still on point, but we're also selling the benefits of the company to potential customers as well and telling them why they should become one of our members.
And when you say bring new customers in, you mean downloading your app.
It's downloading the app. And then for us, it's also the what happens to them after that. So whether they actually go on and become one of our members. But primarily for us, we use Twitter to get more people to download the app, and then we can use other potentially avenues to turn them into full customers from that. So it's very much a kind of slightly higher up the funnel channel for us at the moment.
The number one time when people download the most apps is when they get a brand new device, which makes a lot of sense. You get this brand new shiny device, and then you're really excited about filling it up with different, all those brilliant squares. And so that's a great time to, and I believe we even have new device targeting in our ads programs as well to like get right in when those people want to fill their device with new apps.
I think it's about reaching people at a prime time when they're likely to convert. If you're focusing on acquiring new customers via Twitter, it's thinking about how and when are they going to be looking to potentially become a customer of yours. One other thing we've actually looked at as well is targeting people when they're using Wi-Fi rather than when they're on their data. If you're looking at an app install, I mean, I don't know if it's just me being stingy, but I don't use my data to download apps.
No, that makes sense.
So I wait until I get home, or I wait until I'm on Wi-Fi somewhere to download something. So I think there's very small tweaks and changes you can make to your Twitter advertising, which can potentially make a lot of difference to anything that's conversion focused. I think a big thing for me is it's not always what I think is going to work the best does actually work the best. So I think always let the numbers speak for themselves. So there's sometimes it might be, as long as something goes out and it's on message with brand, it's fine. But there might be something that you don't necessarily think is going to be the best idea and the best thing ever. Let the data speak for itself and see what happens.
We see that again and again with different businesses where, and we have it happen ourselves with our own business. You are the expert on your customers, and yet you never know them as well as you think you do. And we're always surprised what my team always has at least one experimental project running every single quarter, something we can't measure, something we don't necessarily know how it's going to go. That's really important to us because we're constantly surprised where our best audience comes from, where our most voracious audience comes from. And sometimes we'll try something thinking, oh, we don't really know if people are going to care about this or if that's the right targeting or that. And then it'll just go off and people get really excited and they've been kind of like waiting for this specific type of copy or this specific targeting or a certain topic to come across their feeds.
Exactly that. And I think it's always good to try out unique things on different channels as well. So you've got to remember that realistically, people that you're targeting on Twitter might have seen your creative somewhere else. So it's always good to have consistent messaging around things. But there also might be some kind of level of cross-channel ad fatigue if you're using similar stuff. So it's always good to try out something experimental, I think.
Especially on different social platforms, because we're at a place with social media where every single platform is so different. They all do different things well, in the same way that you wouldn't put the same copy on a billboard as you would a newspaper ad, as you would a flyer, as you would your radio commercial, your TV commercial. You know, you're going to tweak each one of those for a different type of medium. And social media is now at the level of maturity where each one has diverged so much that we can be thought of as completely separate mediums.
I think it comes back to what audience you're speaking to. I think you think of the Twitter audience as very different to the audience you would get on other social channels, like you were saying. So I think it's always key to try and be as native to that platform as possible.
And now is the time for this episode's topic. I'm going to ask you, yes, you, for your hot takes. This episode's topic is, of course, about B2B brand voice. Businesses who talk to businesses. It's stereotypically thought of as a little bit boring, a little bit inside baseball. So I want to hear your tips. How do you make it interesting? How do you make it compelling? What are the B2B businesses that are doing it right? This question is currently live on @TwitterBusiness. Please reply to us there and we will engage right back. And now, back to Phil. How would you describe your Twitter audience in three words?
Vocal, determined, and confident.
They sound passionate. Wow, that's
probably a good one.
How do you market to an audience that's vocal and confident and determined?
I think you have to be kind of those things yourself as well when you're marketing to them. So you have to be, if you're not confident in what you're putting out to a confident person, they're probably going to shoot you down pretty quickly.
Yeah, which makes A/B testing pretty easy, right?
Exactly. So I think use it as a positive, not a negative. If you've got an audience that's going to be vocal and let you know about something as soon as you put it out, use it as knowledge for the future. You'll know pretty quickly whether someone likes something or not on Twitter, I always think.
So if someone is doing B2B marketing, They're trying to A/B test on their ads campaigns and they are totally out of ideas. What are some tips that you would give them?
So you could start with the creative itself. If you're using a video, have you tried using a static image and vice versa? If you're looking at the text above the picture, have you tried adding a couple of emojis to it? Have you tried a slightly shorter version of the, you don't have to use the 280 characters you've got there. Have you tried a shorter version? If you're looking at the targeting, have you made a slight tweak to the audience you're targeting? If you're looking at the bidding, what optimization method are you using? Are you using app clicks? Are you using installs? What's your charging method? Can you change one of those?
So then when you noticed that it was more about app clicks, what takeaway did you get from that that other people could use?
It was about thinking about what point in the journey the user was. Maybe they were actually looking to discover the app potentially rather than at a point where they're definitely going to install it. So it's catching them at that right point. They're interested enough to click on the app, but maybe not necessarily download it yet.
And that's really heartening because you have so many educational materials and so community-driven as well that having someone just click and look at it and then be more aware of Tide Business is certainly a win for all of y'all because you have that holistic support of content.
Exactly that. And it shows that the content we've been putting out to people to help them has hopefully paid some kind of fruition for us.
So who are some must-follow accounts in FinTech Twitter?
So I think the C-suite level from some of the major players are key follows on Twitter. So our founder, George Beavis, is tweeting about general FinTech in the UK a lot. He's also very responsive to people asking him questions about the scope of, you know, the scope of the landscape at the moment within small business banking. I also think as well that if you look at Monzo's founder, Tom Blomfield, he's a good follow too. If you want anything that's Monzo related or generally kind of Challenger Bank related, he's a good follow too. And putting any kind of business bias aside, I'd also say that Anne Bowden, who from Starling, her story is really interesting in why she founded the business. And she does some good interviews on kind of UK small business banking and Challenger Banking generally. So they're all worth a follow.
Phil, thank you for all of the expertise that you've given us about Twitter and Twitter ads and B2B and FinTech. And you've had some very brilliant answers, but now I want shorter ones. I'm going to ask you some rapid fire questions and I want you to answer in 280 characters or less. What movie have you seen more times than any other movie?
Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers.
What is your favorite emoji?
The kissing face.
What did you want to be when you were a little kid?
A professional footballer.
How do you prefer to meet new people? Handshake, fist bump, hug, wave? I'm
still a firm believer in the handshake.
If you got a huge windfall of money, what is the first thing you would buy?
A holiday for my parents.
What is your ideal breakfast?
Being in London, a full English.
What is the proper way to drink tea?
Just with milk and with your pinky finger hanging out.
What is your favorite time of day?
Morning.
What is your happy place?
My kitchen.
What is your favorite new app?
Cozy. It's a shared calendar, so my girlfriend can't get annoyed at me for saying doing things last minute.
What is your favorite Twitter tip?
Think before you tweet.
What is your favorite life tip?
Don't take life too seriously and be grateful for what you have.
Think before you tweet and don't take life too seriously. Phil McElhenney, thank you so much for joining us today.
You can find us at business.twitter.com/charactercount. Character Count is a production of Pod People for @TwitterBusiness. This episode was hosted by me, Joe Wadlington. Our executive producer is Rachel King. This episode was produced by Eliza Lambert. It was also produced and edited by Christopher Mawson. Music by Annalise Nelson and Dax Schaefer. Special thanks to Marissa Window and Lindsay Bruce and the entire Twitter customer success team. Thank you so much for listening. Please subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded. This episode's topic is now live at Twitter Business. Go tweet us your hot takes and follow us for incredible tips on Twitter ads marketing and best practices. Or follow me at Joe Wadlington for tweets about how sliders are not an acceptable dinner, but Chex Mix is. Have a great day.